This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
So think with me. Have you ever noticed how service can vary between one restaurant to another, even in the same chain? At some, you're walked in. You walk in and you see this friendly greeter and they say, "Hello, how are you?" And they smile and you find yourself smiling back and they take you to a table and they do it as quickly and as efficiently as they can. And at others, you walk in and they hardly make eye contact with you, let alone greet you in a friendly way. You're almost a bother. This kind of disparity is found among McDonald's, Burger King's, Cracker Barrel's, and all kinds of restaurants. In fact, you experience the difference pretty often in a lot of your life. Walk into a certain store and you always feel good when you walk in. Walk into another one that's just like it and you just want to get out of there. What's the difference? What's going on? How can you have two stores, two companies that are very similar in nature, be so different? Why is it that some schools embrace new ideas and work hard at growing their what they do in their school, while others see new ideas as a distraction? Why is it that some teachers roll up their sleeves and get to work, and others simply roll their eyes? I remember walking into a classroom one day in which I saw the following. There were several. I remember about three over on the one side that were sitting up paying close attention to what the teacher was saying. They looked engaged. I saw several students slouch down with a growl. It looked to me like it was a quiet growl, fortunately. I saw several students exchanging flying projectiles. And the teacher was valiantly trying to cajole learning out of those students. Sort of chaotic. I remember walking to a classroom one day in which I saw the following. Students were working in pairs, fully engaged. They were interested in what was happening in the class. They were quietly talking together, fascinated by the project at hand. The teacher was enjoying herself, and calm and studiousness prevailed. In both of those scenarios, the teacher's desire for students to learn was obvious. It was clear. But the results were quite different. What was going on? I'd like to begin our week together by considering a little bit the title that I chose, Context for Learning, the Classroom Culture. I'd like to begin by asking you why you teach. Why do you teach? If you thought you were going to get by without answering questions publicly, you're in the wrong place. You slip out the back door. No, actually, stay here. It's going to be okay. Why do you teach?
I enjoy it.
You enjoy it. Okay, for the enjoyment. What else? Who's over here?
To inspire.
To inspire. To inspire what? Who?
The student.
The student. Oh, to inspire the students. Okay, someone over here.
I've been called.
Okay, a calling. Wonderful. Why are your students in your classroom? I'll expand on that. That's hyperbole, please. Why else? Why are students in your classroom?
To learn.
The students, ideally, are in your classroom to do this, to learn. I'm speaking to experienced teachers this week, so I'm assuming you've been around the block a time or two. And we all know there's other reasons why they're there. Some of these pop up in the most inconvenient times in the classroom. Others of those pop up in the right moment when it turned the corner in your classroom. Someone got excited about it. They wanted to be there. Or they say, you know, my dad told me, and it changes everything. I think it's good for us as teachers to become clear on why we are doing what we're doing. And it's good for students to figure out why they are doing what they're doing. The bottom line is, you're in your classroom to teach. When you sort of strip it all down, that's kind of what you're about. That's why they call you a teacher. And that's why we call the students a learner. They're there to learn. Now, it's far bigger than that. It's expansive. We could talk for hours about this. But let's boil it down to those two things. The teacher is to teach, the student is to learn. I don't doubt the desire on your part, at least for most of you, I hope all of you, to teach. But just because you have a desire to teach does not guarantee that you have students who want to learn. There's a bridge between the two, I'm going to suggest, that helps connect those dots. And it's the framework, the context in which student learning happens, your culture. What makes one student excited to go to Sunday school class this year and next year? Dad, it's so boring in there. I'm sorry, I'm exposing the weaknesses of our family, you see, but did you know that happens in church? Do you remember that growing up? Once in a while you get a boring, can I say that, Sunday school teacher? They didn't prepare, and you read through the lesson, and then you did all the activities that Howard and Esther made, you know, in your CLE quarterlies, and you walked right through it, and you know, I happen to know they really didn't want you to actually do it quite that way. That was a guide, not a chain. And so one year, my children enjoy Sunday school class. They want to go, and the next year, suddenly they don't. What happened? There's lots of things that could happen, but I think one part of this equation is the culture that's established. We teach so that our students learn. We are an extension of our churches as we teach from a Christian perspective, yea, an Anabaptist Christian perspective. We want to enable them to love God with their whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. We are part of a bigger picture in the great mandate to make disciples of all people in all nations. And so learning is at the heart of the classroom. Growth of the mind and heart and body of each student is part and parcel of what goes on in our classrooms. Context for learning. Context. So why do I speak of context? I want you to consider that you don't learn in a vacuum. You don't learn in a vacuum. A speaker sets the stage for what they're saying. They try to provide you a backdrop. That, by the way, it's just what I did a little bit ago. Try to create this backdrop. I came in a little while ago and I checked to make sure the thermostat was turned down so that the air conditioner would continue to run here. You see, that mattered to me. When I was teaching class this summer, I had a first period class, which meant that students could come in just a hair groggy. They did really very well, but I made a point of going to that classroom between 6 and 6:30, making sure the AC was on. Often I turned the lights on. I put my handouts on a table and made sure the room was presentable. Why did I do that? Why do you do that in the morning? Or the evening before, if you're more organized. You see, we actually have a sense. We have a sense, or we ought to develop a sense, that the context, the room, the decor, the ambience actually helps us or hurts us as we teach. And when students came in the door, I like to say good morning. I like a little good-natured banter back and forth. its context for what we're about to do. Why bother? Because it affects learning. The context for learning is like a framework. It's not noticed easily. It's not right in your face. You only get it when it's not there. Oh, it's missing. Consider a building. We build a foundation and we put some walls on that foundation, and it's pretty easy to notice the structure, the framework of that building. But after a while, we don't see the inside structure so much. We see shingles and bricks and nice windows, and eventually in this picture there'll be a door there. The framework, do you see the framework now? It's there. Do you see it? No. It's the house you notice. And if you own a house or you live in one, you realize you're in a constant state of remodel, at least for a lot of us, unless you have a brand new house. There's always things to fix and maintain. The idea of building framework in your classroom doesn't end because now we've sort of got it. We have the procedures in place, the rules in place. We know what we want. It's a constant tweaking in which we absorb, what are my students like? What am I like? How will these work together? What framework will I build in order to have learning in my classroom? Context is so vital. Think about when children are happy, when they're contented, when they're learning. Think about what that means for you as a teacher. Think what joy and pleasure it is to teach when it's like that. And think about what happens when it's not that. What does it do for you? And so we carefully consider the stage that we set. And it pays big dividends, not just for you, it pays it for the student. So what is it that your children experience in your classroom? What does your framework in your classroom feel like? Look like? What's underneath everything when you teach science? When you teach English, Bible? So this week, I hope to establish a bit of a framework for us in our classrooms. I would like to turn our attention to some definitions here. And I am indebted to men like Kent Peterson, Terrence Deal, Todd Whitaker, Steve Grenert, and list goes on, for their work and their research and study in culture and schools. So, school culture. I'm going to start there, not the classroom. We're starting the school. School culture is different in a school than it is in a business sense. You do things differently. That's been established. It works differently than a church culture. There's lots of similarities in all of these, but it's not the same thing. School culture is not a problem to be solved. It tells us what is, so that we understand the values that are driving us. School culture is a framework that indicates how we actually solve problems. It tells us what's passed on from generation to generation. It tells us what the stories are that will be told in 15 years about you. Every school has its unique culture, and you can feel it when you walk into a school. But it's something way more than rules and procedures. I can figure out the rules and procedures in your classrooms pretty quickly. And you could do the same in mine. The expectations, they're there. It's more than that. Beneath the surface of everyday life in schools is an underground river of feelings, folkways, norms, and values that influence how people go about their daily work. This taken-for-granted set of expectations affects how people think, feel, and act. It shapes how they interpret the hundreds of daily interactions of their work lives and provides meaning and purpose in their interactions, activities, and work. That is a large definition for school culture. It's actually a pretty good one. It's an underground river. It's not on top. You can't see it. But it's there. It's always moving. It never stays put. Another way to say this that I like about as well as any is culture is the way we do things around here. So I'd like to give you some ways to think about culture here. Think of culture as the social glue that holds people together. What keeps your church together? It's not just a set of standards. There's more than that. Culture is activity behind the scenes or between the lines. Culture is what's really going on. It's the patterns of behavior that distinguish us from them. This can be within your own school. You realize that. Teacher A and Teacher B. It's different walking into my different teachers' classrooms in our school. It's different because they're different. It's going to be different. It is deeply embedded beliefs and assumptions. Deeply embedded beliefs and assumptions. It's the unwritten rules. The unwritten rules. It's the default mode of behavior. It's what you automatically revert to as a student or as a teacher. It's what comes out first. It's a collective consciousness. Try this one. Shared social reflexes. I kind of like that. It sort of gives me a little picture. Shared social reflexes. It's the box that we try to think outside of. Find yourself saying that, don't you? Let's think outside the box. You know what you're saying? Let's think outside our culture for a moment, our school culture. Let's think about this. Let's put all this other away and let's think outside the box. That means you're trying to lay down your culture. Culture is the unique personality of the school or classroom. It is the way you work out problems and issues in your school. It is how you cope with the bad stuff that happens. It's how you celebrate life together. It is manifested in people's patterns of behavior, the way they think. That's culture. And I want you to remember that culture influences the way that you think and feel and act. It influences the way you think, feel. It's powerful. School culture is very difficult to give definition to. This is why I labored on this for a while. I don't know how you define culture exactly. And you know what? That's exactly why we overlook it in our schools. You can't ever quite get a hold of it as to why this is the way it is. Or why do I feel this way? I'm going to step outside just a moment here and I'm going to say this. If you're a school leader here, you need to be thinking about this not only in a classroom context, but in the school context. And you know that this is one of my hobby horses anyway, but principles that are here, this is a significant part of your job. Now I'm back in. Let's look at culture versus climate. And I've become aware of this in the last several months as I've been thinking about this and doing some reading. Culture is important, and so is climate. A school's climate is both a window into its culture and a learned response that the culture teaches people new to the school. You ever gone to a new school? Think about that. Sure you have. All of you went to a new school. Maybe you went back to the school you graduated from, but you still went to a new school because you were in charge, and suddenly it's very different. All the things that you didn't know existed that suddenly exist that teach you, you shouldn't really laugh there, or that's not funny there, or that brings reaction. Whew, I gotta be careful. You're being taught. When you're a new teacher, there's a lot to learn. And one of those things is about the climate. So I'd like to try to differentiate between the two today here. Culture is the group's personality. Climate is the group's attitude. Personality or attitude. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. Culture gives Mondays permission to be miserable. And climate differs from Monday to Friday, February to May. Now, if I'm not careful, I'm going to get carried away here on the Monday thing. You know, if you've been around me very long, that I think Garfield has negatively impacted Mennonites. Because he is the champion of bad Mondays. And the culture has, of course, absorbed that. And you live for the weekend, right? You all seem to know this right off the bat. How'd you know this? Who taught you that? Who taught you that? Who got up and told you that's how it should be? Please, all of you seem to know this. How do you know it? How do you know it?
You just know it.
Just know it. Well, but someone had to teach you that, didn't they? No, she's saying no. Isn't that interesting? So Monday should be a miserable day and everyone's dog tired, nothing's working right. Okay? It's Monday. After it's a Monday. Of course, I take a very different position for those people who unfortunately have to live with me, understand this. But think about the difference then between that and difference in climate in your school, difference between Mondays and Fridays. Wednesday, maybe you have an all-school chapel. Think about the changes of the climate. Think about what happens when the sun is shining outside and they want to go play and you're needing to finish up some really hard work. Can the climate change? Did you know I can change the climate in your classroom immediately? You know how easy it is? A dozen donuts. I can change the climate in your classroom in a heartbeat. So can you. That didn't change the culture, though. The personality of the group. It's not that. It's not the same thing. I can change the climate in your school in a heartbeat. And you can, too. Culture takes time to establish, and climate is relatively easy to change. Culture can't be felt, even by group members. But climate can be felt when you enter a room. Culture is part of us. Climate surrounds us. I missed one here. Culture is based on values and beliefs, and climate is based on perceptions. That's why you can change it that easily. Culture is based on values and beliefs, and climate is based on perceptions. Culture is the way we do things around here, and climate is the way we feel around here. Culture determines whether or not improvement is possible. Climate is the first thing that improves when positive change is made. Are you starting to get a picture, the difference? Now, climate actually is pretty important. So is culture. But I want us to start seeing the difference a little bit because I think that might help us when we think about our particular responsibilities in our classrooms. And so, just a few things here. Personality versus attitude. That was that first one I showed. Culture is a school's personality, and climate is its attitude. The biggest difference is that attitude is easier to change. Have you ever had an attitude change? Sure you have. I'm pretty sure that parents even tried to help you there. Well, you know, I don't want to. Well, you know, your parents had ways of dealing with that, right? They had one-liners talking about, you know, you don't have to if you want to. All kinds of things. And they had other motivations, some with more pain than others. And, you know, we just kind of experience life that way. Attitude's easy to change. Think about this. Need proof in your school? Announce there's going to be a snow day tomorrow. And you will experience a change in the climate. The promise of the snow doesn't change the personality of the school, the culture, but the collective shift in attitude, climate, allows a school to reveal what it actually values. I'll give you a little space to like a snow day, okay? Me too. But think about this. In this case, the school climate reveals that the culture values not being in school the next day. Of course, if you change the personality of a school, it requires a more purposeful and sustained effort than does changing an attitude. Think of personality versus attitude in this way. Lifestyle versus a particular action. It's one thing to say, yes, I'm going to do this, and I do an action. But my lifestyle action might be over here somewhere where it doesn't even fit. You can actually do that. Do you know that? I'm not making statements about whether that's healthy and all of this. I'm just saying, isn't that true? You can do things outside of your lifestyle that actually don't make sense. It's one thing if it's once. Probably. It's quite another if it becomes your person. Who you are. Your personality. The morale is a barometer. The morale of your student body, of your classroom, is a barometer of the culture. It has a very strong effect on school climate. Setting the tone of your classroom morale is 24/7. A single event is not enough. You can't just take them on a fun-filled trip and it changes the morale. The morale is very different. It tells that morale can be lost quickly, and it can also come up relatively quickly. But you're always working on morale. It's halfway between climate and culture. I want to remind us, too, that culture gives us permission to be miserable. That's the climate. Culture gives permission for certain things to exist in your climate, in the school climate, in your classroom. Monday is not an inherently bad day. Behold, God created on Monday. And he even liked what he did on a Monday. There's even precedent for you to like a Monday. It so happens that Monday marks the start of the work week after 2 days of rest. And so as a result, many teachers are more lethargic and reluctant to work on Mondays than during the rest of the week. Some teachers are almost useless on Mondays, not because they're actually tired, but that is because they're how they're supposed to act. You're supposed to not like Mondays. That's actually true. It's not in all cases, but there's a lot of truth here. Now imagine with me that a teacher walks into your school on a snowy Monday morning, 20 below zero, it's windy, gusty, it's ridiculous, the school district didn't call off school, and she actually walks in with a bounce in her step, and she's in a good mood. She actually likes what she does, even on Mondays. Now, how much you react if you were an anti-Monday person? You would think things like, what is wrong with you? Or what is she so happy about? What could have happened that made her that way? You might even ask her a question like that with a smile on your face, but deep down, you half hope she gets as grumpy as you are. Fast forward to Friday. Maybe the same teacher hangs around Friday evening doing extra work for the next week, and we wonder about that. What is wrong with her? She is getting ready for the next week, and it's the weekend, after all. Isn't that what we live for? Singling out positive teachers and making comments like that make negative teachers feel better by reinforcing the negative culture about Mondays. In fact, school culture might even encourage a miserable mindset on Mondays. Miserable mindset on Mondays. I kind of like that. And I can't wait to get out of here mindset on Fridays. Even when the mindsets don't conform to the teacher's true feelings. That's the power of culture. Even more crucially, a culture that encourages this in teachers is essentially telling students, the learners, that they too should not want to be in school and should spend their school days impatient for the weekend. Culture is powerful. And we are more affected by this than we want to admit pretty often. It shapes us. It jerks us around. I just use it as an example. It's not the only thing I talk about, okay, is Mondays and our view of Mondays. But I am distressed that we can lose 1/5 of our school week to grumpiness. I don't let my students go there. We don't do that in here. That's all there's to it. That's just how it is. And I think my students actually don't mind Mondays. Now, I talk about it, keep in front of them. I've tried to change the culture and expectation in 7th and 8th grade. It's possible. But if that's not your person, your personality, part of your culture, you can't bring that to bear on the climate in ways that are effective. Values. Values are often unconscious to those who hold them and so difficult to talk about with others or to even understand ourselves. Those looking into your classroom can see the values and can understand by the way we act under different circumstances and the way we use our resources and all those things. They can actually understand our values. Argyris, in 2010, wrote an article, and in this article, he said, "The difficulty of articulating values is precisely what helps to make them sustainable." The difficulty of articulating values is precisely what helps to make them sustainable. That can cut two ways. Think about this. What we care about, what we value, shapes everything about our classroom. Our values are expressed in our actions. And our values should be evaluated by seeing what our actions actually are, not what we say they are. Whereas a change in climate can occur instantly, box of donuts. A change in culture is a slow process because it's a changing of the value system. One of the things that makes cultural change so difficult is that it's hard for us to pinpoint. It's always easier to describe what you do, the climate, what you do, rather than why you do it. If you visit another school, you can see what drives them far easier than the people that are right in the school. So one reason you should visit other schools, it opens your eyes to your own values. When it comes to school culture, unwritten rules always trump the written rules. It's nice when they're together, but unwritten rules always trump the written rules in terms of values. You might do the right thing, but I'm telling you, it's the unwritten stuff. It's the way we are that actually matters. And so culture influences our values and beliefs. And our values and beliefs influence culture. And so there's this little tug of war going on often in our classrooms. Climate is the values and beliefs in action. And there are times when just by adjusting the climate, you can help change the culture, but it's going to take a long time. And a sustained change in climate. When we are aware of why we do the things we do, we can no longer do them unthinkingly. Now, I'd like to have us do a little assignment here. I noticed that I have more to do than I have time for. And so I am probably going to start off, I want us to get this. We're probably going to start off, I want you to bring back those papers. But I'm going to model something for you here. And so I'm going to ask, I have a little assignment we're going to do here. And I'm going to ask Kyle to do something here, and I don't know what he's going to all do to me. And I'm going to respond to this. I'm going to try to model what I want you to think about, what I want you to do with each other here. So I'm asking you to think of two words that describe the climate of your classroom. A positive, there's probably nothing negative in your climate in your classroom, but if there happens to be, put it down. We're going to have a chance to share that just among us. Okay, probably not now, but we're going to do that. We'll start off with that. And then you're going to give an example of why you would have chosen the particular word you chose for climate. Okay? Now, some of you, I won't see you back tomorrow, will I? Don't be scared about it. Help each other out. It's okay. But if you want to leave, I'm not offended either. And then you will do that with a negative word. And then I'm going to want you to write down the cultural values that support the negative climate word. Do the same thing for the positive. I'll walk you through that tomorrow. But what I want, Kyle is my 11th and 12th grade teacher, and I asked him to think of a word that describes the climate of either our school or our classroom, and I'm gonna talk about this, try to give an example, and I'm going to also try to give the cultural values that are underneath that. And it might be positive or negative. I have no idea what he's going to say, and with Kyle, you never know anyway. Okay? So, Kyle, give me a word that describes the climate.
Well, I was thinking about the 7th and 8th grade classes in Garrett's classroom. And a lot of words came to mind in regard to the climate, one of them being odorous. But that is not the word I actually chose.
Was that because of me or my students?
No, actually, I thought of a word that I think can really fit the negative and the positive, so you can work it however you want to, but the word that comes to mind for the 7th and 8th graders is susceptible. Maybe open is another way to think of that. And I think there is a climate of that there in the 7th and 8th grade classroom.
Okay, so for an example, susceptible. Okay, so in my classroom, they are what we would call gullible. So I can actually tell them things that even I have a twinkle in my eye momentarily, and they don't get it. They miss it. I have to back up and say, "Now, I was actually pulling your leg." Okay, they tend to accept whatever I say unthinkingly. In terms of the open word, an example of that is the fact that when I do need to correct them, they tend to melt like butter. You're right. I'm sorry. They're open to correction. I don't know what all you were thinking, but I'm just pulling a couple examples. All right, now, I can't tell you why he chose those words, okay? But I can talk just a moment here about the cultural values. So what is it in my classroom? By the way, this is grueling. What sustains that underneath everything? Why are they susceptible? One of the reasons my students are susceptible is because there is a feeling that junior high doesn't quite cut it. Junior high is actually this halfway in between. They're not adults. They're not children. They don't know what they are. They're in constant identity crisis. So they are open to all kinds of things, including negative influence and this kind of thing. So underneath it all, it feels to me like we have a certain sense of expectation that they should be, you know, kind of like boys and girls, and they should, you know, which they should, but you know what I mean. And they should be a little immature sometimes, and we don't quite expect that they would always, you know, do things right. And there is that, there's that value underneath that. That's why at a program a few years ago, I remember this, we really worked hard on changing the value of music in the school. And when I remember the year that I finally had a junior high class, we'd had them for a few years, we were doing some things, and it was a great program. You know, one of those that you're like, you can't believe this actually happened to you because it actually worked. You know, nobody switched parts 2 weeks before because they no longer could hit the high notes and things like this. It actually worked. And it was pretty good, actually. I have to admit, it was pretty good. I was very happy about this. And parents came and said, we can't believe it. Okay, what's that telling me? Think about the value underneath all that. There's no way. They can't do it. They're too immature. They don't care about music. They don't care about music. So how could they produce that? So it's the whole value of what we think junior high students can do that actually creates this crazy peer pressure to do stupid stuff they wouldn't normally do. And it also creates, they're still children, so they're still soft, so I can work with them. And that is also part of our culture. We tell our children, say sorry. You must be kind. You might not feel like, let's talk about it. We're not going to do that this way. And they're open because the cultural value coming from, we'll talk about this more, but all, from all over, is actually says that you ought to live a certain kind of way and it matters. Did I give you a window? I want you to think way beyond just the surface here. I want you to go underneath and think about the why, not just the what. We have to think about the what, then we want to think behind that and say, why? And it's not like there's right or wrong answers here. But I think if we talk with each other, I think we can help each other see some of those things. If we stop a moment to reflect, it's not too difficult to see how important people are in this equation. We are not talking buildings and curriculum and fancy playground equipment and the right kind of bat and ball and gloves. And we're not talking about any of that. We are actually talking about those things do have consequences. But we're talking about something that is related to people. And I want to begin, after a little exercise tomorrow, talking about people and the culture. We've looked at the big picture. Let's look at the classroom culture tomorrow. We all need to take responsibility for our own classrooms. And you've been in school long enough to know that the school culture informs your classroom, but it does not put it into a certain box. I've been in schools where this classroom was very different from this one. Same school culture. What's going on? You are not judged to a life of living under a negative school culture or whatever you might have. It's not that way. You have opportunity in your classroom, and your classroom feeds back into the broader school culture. And when you have people, teachers, in place who know what they're doing and have thought about why they're doing it, they know they're there to teach, and students know they're there to learn. Think about the power and the way that shapes culture over a generation. It's important that we consider very deeply this issue of culture. It's such a powerful part of what you do every single day. We daren't let down our guard.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.